you won like some prize money, right?
Talk about that.
You know, the punk band actually won something.
Hey, Crimson Riot, welcome to the Question the Answers podcast. How are you guys doing?
Howdy. Good. How are you?
Good. It's really great to talk to you guys. It's been too long since I've seen you guys.
Yep. I was going to say the last time we saw you was, right before COVID. Or like, I guess during COVID, but like we didn't know it was COVID yet kind of thing. Right. Yeah.
I know. That was like so wild because, you know, a few of us in the band. So, you know, for context, Tsunami Bomb and Crimson Riot have a long history. You know, we've known each other for many years and they've played shows with the band before. And during the last run of shows that we did a stop in Las Vegas and a few of us actually got sick, which may or may not have been COVID. The jury's kind of out because we never formally got tested for it, but a few of us got pretty sick and Gabe was one of them that got sick and Chris from Crimson Riot actually ended up filling in for drums for our set in Las Vegas, which we thank you again for. That was
it was just an opportunity for all of us to get drunk and just have fun.
Yeah, right. I know. Like at that point, everybody needed a beverage.
I mean, because, you know, Gabe doesn't usually like tap out very easily. I think he was saying like in his history, he's only ever had to miss, I think, one Tsunami Bomb show. Or maybe two at most or something like that. So this would have been like either the second or third. So it like, I mean, he was sick and like, took a lot for him to get out. But back to our guests. So yeah, Crimson Riot, we've got Roxy, Chris, and Ryan. They're a three piece from Las Vegas, Nevada, who also happen to have another band called the Roxy Gunn Project, which is actually their profession. Like that's actually their bread and butter, what they do for a living. And I thought it'd be really great to have you on the show to kind of talk about, you know, first and foremost, Crimson Riot and what you've got going on with that, as well as your, you know, more professional, you know, do this for a living gig with the Roxy Gunn Project and kind of how those two, you know, work together and, you know, what's the differences and et cetera. So needless to say, what I'd love to kind of first and foremost start out with is how did, you know, the Crimson Riot Roxy Gunn Project come together? Give me a little bit of a history of both and, you know, tell me what's going on with that.
Sure. Okay. So, so the Roxy Gunn Project started in 2011 and actually like late 2010, really. Yeah. And I had been an acoustic artist for many, many years. And I really wanted to be in a band. So we decided like, okay, well, let's put like a temporary band together and, you know, just kind of get you started. And then we'll kind of piece in the players as we go. So Ryan's my dad. And he was like, well, I'll play drums for you like temporarily and it'll be cool. And we'll just like wait for the right person to come along. I'm like, cool. So then couldn't really find a bass player. Like a lot of bass players that we auditioned were like super freaked out by the concept of a capo, so that was like a weird thing.
they can't do math.
Yeah, bass math non-existent. So like Chris was playing guitar in another band and we were like, well, he could probably play bass, so do you just want to like play bass temporarily? And he's like, sure. So then we had another guitar player and he ended up pretty shortly after we got started getting a job as a bartender on like Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, which is like it was like band time, right?
We got busy real fast too.
Yeah, really
like out of the gate. We had a lot of gigs right out of the gate when the band started.
Yeah. Yeah. So our very first gig was New Year's Eve 2010. And we had our guitar player. We had to part ways with him just because his job got super busy and we couldn't play any gigs. And we found John and he came in like out of the blue in like early April of 2011. And this was still the temporary band, which is why it was called the Roxy Gunn Project, because that was even a placeholder name. And we ended up winning an award with a local magazine for like rising star or whatever. And we were like, oh no. So our picture was in stuff and we're like, okay, this is just who we are, I guess. So that's been going for 10 years. And we have a new guitar player now, Randy. But the Roxy Gunn Project now is just covers. So it's that's our working band. So we work on
the day job.
Well, we used to work on the strip, BC, and but that was our day job, was playing covers on the strip in downtown here in Vegas. So that's the Roxy Gunn Project now. And then Crimson Riot came about when our guitar player John left, and we had a tour booked for the Roxy Gunn Project because we also had originals with that band. And we're like, what are we going to do? Should we just get another guitar player, or should we just try to do a three-piece thing? And we decided that this is what the deal is going to be.
Yeah, the three of us were so passionate about playing music and doing it.
And playing music together.
We all had the same end game plan. So it made sense for us to, you know, you find somebody else and it's like, yeah, I'm totally into it. And then all of a sudden, oh, dude, I can't go on tour. My job won't let me. Oh, dude, I can't go on tour. Like, my girl is like raising chickens and I got to be there. So it's just like, you know what? The three of us have nothing but music.
Yeah. So it was it was easy for us to kind of, not necessarily easy, but it made more sense logically to just be like, okay, you know what? The three of us like know what we want. We have the same game plan. Let's just see if we can do something with just the three of us, because we know that the three of us are on the same page always.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, it's such an interesting like game you have to play when you're starting bands and like getting the logistics of it together, because like a three piece is fundamentally like the easiest setup for any kind of rock and roll band. Cause you have your core elements, you have guitar, you have the bass, you have the drums, and then you have vocals amongst that. Or you could possibly have like a fourth solo singer, but even then it's not always required. Like you're totally right. Like it's fundamentally so important that if you're wanting to really do this as your primary objective, like everyone does have to be on the same page. Like everyone has to have that as a main priority. And if anyone just can't do it, then it's like, it's not so much that they're dead weight, you know, like that's kind of overly dramatizing the whole situation, but it's just, you know, hey, like we're going this way and you gotta come with us. And if you can't be there, like, you know, sometimes the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one, you know, to get all Spock on everyone. But but no, I mean, that's cool. I mean, so you talk about how like Roxy Gunn Project is your day job effectively, you know, and so you're doing that and you were doing it on the strip. And I mean, I've seen video footage and, you know, lots of like photos and stuff of you playing in front of these really huge crowds on the Vegas Strip. I mean, like, what are some of like the major differences between those two worlds, like in regards to how it is to be in a band that's working as a professional cover band or like a working band in that sense versus, you know, a band that's trying to do something on a more of a professional level, but it's still kind of like mostly a passion project, you know?
Well, definitely crowd size.
I mean, besides the crowd size, there's really no difference on how we approach it. Yeah. Because we've been doing it for so long, we know that this isn't a hobby. This is a job, and this is our career. This is a business. And in both bands, you have to treat them, if you want to be successful, as a business. You can't just go in there and be like, hey, I'm a band and I'm going to play shows and all that, and then not realize all the logistics that go behind the scenes that you have to do yourself. So for us, besides the crowd size, there's really no difference on the way we approach both. I mean, with the cover project, we go out there and we give 150% every single time. Even if it's a 4-hour gig, you know, where you're doing 4 1-hour sets, that whole time you're sitting there just giving all. And then when we play as Crimson Riot, we go out there and give 150%. Even if that's a 30-minute set, we give all no matter what.
Because, or if it's 10 people.
It
can be rock those 10 people as hard as we can.
We played a gig, our first gig in Santa Monica. Riot. We show up and the opening band, they play and they're like, okay, have a great night, and left. And all that was there was two guys in the back of the bar, the bartender, and like one other person and the sound guy. And we still just crushed it. And the bartender's like, wow, you guys are really good. And the two guys came over and they were visiting from France and they were looking to see the Roxy Gunn Project.
Yeah.
But we had changed the name and all that. And they're like, you guys are really good. And it was just like, we rocked it here. Yeah. Here's all our free stuff.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
It was super funny.
That's cool. I mean, I gotta wonder, you know, I would imagine that because you all spend so much time, you know, practicing and performing, especially with these really long sets that you guys do. I mean, your chops just must be, you know, super honed most of the time. And like, I mean, not so much that it gives you necessarily an advantage, but I mean, I've seen you guys play and like, you're always tight. Like you always bring it and like, you're totally right. You guys leave it all on the stage. Like I've never not seen you guys not play to 100%, you know, effort like every time. And like, you guys always sound great, you know, but I mean, like, what would you say to like that? And like, does it ever start to get like exhausting to you? Like, does it ever start feel like it's a job and like you kind of just want to let it go for a while? I mean,
not really. I mean, on the back end of it, like, I mean, I don't do a lot of the business stuff. That's like Chris's whole thing. So I'm sure like that gets exhausting, like trying to go through different emails. Like, you know, right now, for example, we're trying to book like a small tour out in the Midwest for later in the year. And it's just like, you know, understandably COVID is a play, you know, people are like, we're not really doing shows right now because we're not really sure what's going to happen. But it's, I mean, even before the pandemic, it was really tough, like trying to get a hold of people. And then they're like, all right, cool, you can have the night, but you have to book the bill. And it's like, we've never been to your city. What are some of the bands in town? They're like, I don't know, look it up on Facebook.
Yeah,
kind of thing. And so we're just like, okay,
what's a band?
Yeah, so that's a little brutal, I'm sure. You know, I've seen his frustration come out, just like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. But as far as like playing goes, you know, for us, we've done it for so long, but it like never gets old, because the reaction of people is always different and the people are always different. And you know, like, yeah, I've played Sweet Child of Mine more times than probably any person on the planet.
More than Guns N' Roses.
More than Guns N' Roses, right? Yeah. But when someone asks for it and like inside, I'm like, oh God, this song again, you know, kind of thing. But to see the look on their face when we play it and they're so happy and it's just like making their day, it's like that never gets old.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that we know, musicians, and they're like, oh, playing covers, that has to be horrible. You don't get to play your own songs. And it's like, here's the thing. I get to play music for a living. I get to entertain people. We've had people have the worst day possible come up to us and be like, oh my God, you guys like changed my whole weekend. Like everything was going wrong. My cat died. My car broke down. And I came out and you guys like made everything better. And we get to use it as a marketing tool, because guess what? Now we can promote our original music doing it. Yeah. Going back to like, do we ever feel, I live by the philosophy of Letterkenny.
Yeah.
If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Right.
That's pitter patter.
So I had an old drum teacher back when I was in high school. And he said, let me tell you something. He said, your worst day playing music is better than your best day digging ditches.
Yeah.
And I'm like, absolutely. Yeah. So that's stuck with me forever. And that's just, I never get sick of it. I mean, I've been doing this a long, long time. And I never get sick of it, because as soon as we're on those stages and we hit that first note and you see people light up, that's it, man. It's just like, oh, and then you have that connection with the audience. And it's just like this cool energy, and it just recycles. Mm-hmm. And so we feed off them, they feed off us, and it's just this big, cool, big circle. So I never get burned on it.
Yeah. And I think we all enjoy each other too. So we've played a couple of gigs in Laughlin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no one there. You know, it's night one of four or five. It's 7 o'clock. Everyone's still at dinner. And so we start playing and there's like no one there. And we just look at each other like, what do you want to play? Like, yeah, let's just jam out. We'll work on stuff. And it's like, we make ourselves, we entertain ourselves.
Yeah. Well, we fully enjoy playing together.
Yeah.
You know, going back to like how Crimson kind of happened is like, okay, well, we like playing together and we're pretty good at playing together. So let's just do that.
Yeah.
Let's just play together.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. I mean, so within the dynamic of the band too, I mean, so, you know, Roxy, you mentioned Ryan is your dad, and you and Chris are actually married.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yep. I mean, for, I'm sorry.
We are.
We are.
Surprise.
Hey,
it's been a long pandemic. No.
Yeah.
No, tell us about it.
But you know, for some bands, I mean, that's kind of weird taboo territory to kind of get into. I mean, for some, obviously it's not a big deal, but I don't know. I mean, has that, would you say, ever created like weird tension within the band, or has it more like strengthened your guys's bond as a band?
Both. Like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, fair like enough, you have, yeah. You know, people are like, well, what do you do if you like have an argument? Like, what's going to happen if you like have like a big, huge fight? And it's like, okay, you know, we've fought all the way going to a gig in the car. And then as soon as we get on stage and start playing, we like forget why we were mad in the first place. Yeah. Just like, oh, okay, well, you know, because we joke around on stage and stuff like that. So it just like really eases everything. But I think it's made it a lot easier too, because, you know, going back to having other members, you know, one of the big things that we've noticed with a lot of friends is like relationships are kind of dicey sometimes. If you're like, hey, I'm going out of town for a month, hopefully everything will be cool while I'm gone or whatever, you know, sort of thing. And it's hard for people to do that. So for us being together, it's like we have no issue, we're always together, you know.
Yeah.
So we're very fortunate in that sense too, because I know that it's hard for couples to, you know, be apart that long, and you know, so we're very lucky that we're able to do that.
And it goes back to what I said earlier, this isn't a hobby, this is a job.
Yeah.
And you don't bring your personal life into the job. It's you leave that shit at the door. And if at the end of the show, if we're still mad at each other, we'll pick it right back up as soon as we get in the car. But it's not one of those, you don't ever let the crowd see it. You know, it's everything is still happy go lucky.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, like she said, there was a time we were fighting the whole time, and we get in there and we're all laughing and all that and joking and all that. We get back in the car and it's just like,
yeah.
Good set.
Yeah.
You sounded good tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cause I mean, that, I think that's great that you're able to kind of add that professional layer, you know, to it. Cause you're so right. Like that's nothing that you would ever want the crowd to pick up on, because, you know, they're paying money, you know, sometimes, I mean, sometimes, you know, it's a free show, but regardless of that, like there is a level of professionalism, like has to be brought to the table in order to be considered like a professional act. And
yeah,
I mean, I think that goes without saying that it's good to be able to flex that muscle when you need to. Now, one of the things that I thought was really awesome about your guys's, you know, last couple of years was you won this really big competition. It was like sponsored by Topgolf, and like you got to be on TV, and you won like the contest, and like you got to be showcased on like national television, and you got to go on like these crazy like gigs that you like were sponsored by Topgolf, and you won like some prize money, right?
Talk about that.
You know, the punk band actually won something. Like, yeah, what, no, how did was, that happen?
It was super weird, because like we don't partake in Battle of the Bands. We think that Battle of the Bands is silly. Like, it's art is subjective, so it's like, yeah, I don't think it should be judged by people. Like, I don't know, it's weird. So we have this whole like no Battle of the Bands thing, and we got kind of like caught up in this randomly over like a course of 2 months. They were trying to get a hold of us, and they wanted the Roxy Gunn project. And so when I talked to the casting director, I was like, look, the band you're looking for doesn't exist anymore. And she was like, well, do you have anything that you can bring to the audition? And I'm like, well, yeah, I've got a pop punk band that we can bring. And she was like, perfect, great, see you at the audition. And we're like, okay, whatever. So we go in, and you know, everybody who's anybody in Vegas is there for the audition.
We know everybody that's in there. Yeah.
So we're like, okay, this is going to be a joke, right? Like these, we're talking 5-7 piece bands with keys and all this other stuff.
Sections.
Whatever. Yeah. So we go in and we just like do our thing, and they're like, okay, awesome, thanks for coming down, you know, kind of thing. We're like, great, thank you for having us.
We turned up the amps, just like, we're gonna be as loud and obnoxious as we can, because this is dumb.
Yeah,
we so, threw down as hard as we could. Like, we just pounded it.
Yeah,
it
for like two songs. Boom.
I was this close to just taking the bass off and just slamming it into the bass amp, you know. It's like full punk rock, yeah.
So we get done, and they're like, okay, great. So we leave, we're standing in the parking lot. We're like, well, that was fun and kind of a waste of time, but whatever. So the next day they call And I thought that we had left something there because we have like our name on everything, mm-hmm. playing in casinos and whatnot. So I thought we left something there. We had to go pick up from the place. So I answer the phone and he's like, oh yeah, we want you guys to do the show. And I'm like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, totally. We thought you guys were great. And I'm like, all right. So we went into it not expecting to win anything. We expected to be like first one voted off the island. Give me your torch. Like the whole thing.
Every show needs a loser.
Yeah,
of course. And so we go in and just have a great time. Like a lot of the other bands, you know, they were taking it really serious. This was a big opportunity for them. All stressed out.
They had playbooks and all that, whiteboards and all that, where they're going to be standing. Yeah. And okay, you're going to jump here, yeah. not here.
I don't know if it was quite that serious, but it kind of felt like the tension in the room. The tension in the room was really heavy. So we were just like, we're going to go do something else.
Get drunk and hit golf balls.
Yeah, pretty much is what we ended up doing. But then when we came to like the actual filmed performance, we just went out there and had a good time like we always do. We went out there and gave our best to the people that were there and ended up winning the first round and we're like, weird. And then the second round comes to go to Nashville, win that round, and we're like, these people are going to put us on a plane to Nashville. I can't believe this. So then we get to Nashville.
Yeah, they paid for everything too.
Yeah, it was just like super fun. And so we get to Nashville and we're going up against a Nashville band for the final. They're an incredible band. They're also a cover band in Nashville on their strip. And
the show, they filmed the Nashville. So it was all the East Coast bands in Nashville. They filmed that all in one day. And then the finale. So the crowd had been watching
this band, that band
all day long, just when round one, two, and now here they are in the finals. So it's like, well, great. Now we're competing against a crowd that has no idea who we are, but they're in love with this band.
Right. Mm. So, cause it was crowd vote too. So it was like, they already like these guys, you know, kind of thing. So we go first, we play, leave it all out there, finale, woo. So then we're backstage and it was the first time we'd actually been able to hear a band we were competing against. And they hit the first note, 8-piece band, horn section, and they were flawless. They were perfect. And we were just like, well, this was fun. You know, we're thinking of all the positive things. Like we got a free trip to Nashville. We went to some cool places. Like everything's good.
It was awesome.
It was an awesome experience. So when they announced us as the winner, we were just blown away because we really had no business being there in the first place, we felt. You know, it's like we're a 3-piece pop punk band from Vegas going up against these like amazing R&B and like other bands. And we just didn't know what to do with that. Like we didn't know what to do with this win, this prize that we had been given being who we were. And we were so young at the time too. That was like in the beginning of 2018 and we had just started the band like 6 months prior.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we start bands, everything moves very fast.
Yeah.
It's very fast.
Moves very fast.
That's yeah. That's wild. Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing about it and like, I was just so excited for you guys. Cause I know that, you guys were, you know, you guys were posting about it on, you know, social media and everything. I was just like, dude, that's awesome for these guys. Fuck yeah. And then, you know, I know that you guys got to come and play a show at like, what is it? AT&T Park.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oracle, yeah.
Thing. Like yeah. There was like a couple of events kind of like that. Right. That were sponsored by Topgolf. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we did a couple in Vegas and then we did another one in Nashville and then we did that one in San Francisco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So cool.
Yeah.
And then the executive of Topgolf, he loves like everything we're about. He loves just our attitude that we come to things. It's like, we still have that PMA, like, hey, whatever. It's like, we're just like so chill. And when they were like, hey, we're going to do this. What do you guys think? Okay. Are you sure we can do more? And I'm like,
they're like, you tell us what you do.
Yeah. We'll like, well, you know, going to the AT&T Park thing. They're like, what's your guys' writer? We don't have a writer. We don't, what do we need whiskey. A writer for? We were like, you know what?
Yeah.
So we were like, water? We need 2 bottles of Jameson, a charcuterie or charcuterie board, whatever, the cheese and
fruit
meat.
Fruit tray,
all, just everything. We walk in and there's this spread.
Massive.
And then on stage is 2 bottles of the big bottles of Jameson with cups and all that. And it's like, we were joking. I was like, I should have asked for socks.
I know.
I should have asked for socks.
Yeah, but writers are so funny. Yeah.
They've always been like 100%. So one of the executives, he calls up, he's like, hey, I'm having a birthday party. And we're like, okay, we'll be there. And he's like, no, I want you guys to play. And so he rented out the Viper Room in Hollywood and had us. And it was everyone who's everyone. And like the owner of BMI was there. And the dude from like Virgin Records. And it's like,
what are we doing here?
Like, what are we doing? And of course, everyone's just drunk.
Yeah. That's chill though. I mean, that's cool. Fun. You guys are making those kinds of connections. Cause even if those kinds of connections don't necessarily translate to anything like long-term in the immediate, it could translate to something in the long term.
You know? Sure. Yeah.
Cause I mean, you guys are putting it out there. You guys are being professional. You guys are doing what you guys do and it comes naturally. And if people like it and they'll gravitate to it and then maybe it'll be picked up. And we were talking about this prior to starting the podcast, but one of the things that you guys started doing during the pandemic, because I mean, let's face it, like you guys are professional musicians and, you know, professional musicians, small venues, you know, distributors, like were some of the, you know, big hard hit types of entities, you know, because without having live music and without having the ability to like do that, that your source of income is essentially gone, you know? Mm-hmm. So unless you're already selling thousands and thousands and thousands of records, you know, as a way to supplement your income, there goes your livelihood. So you guys ended up kind of shifting gears to doing a lot of live streaming. And tell me about how that process kind of worked out for you and how it's, you know, turned out.
Yeah, it was strange because it was the week of St. Patrick's Day. And St. Patrick's Day is a very big day for us. That's like one of our busiest days of the year.
The whole weekend.
That whole weekend is like crazy. So we played Saturday night and it was a pretty thin crowd because COVID was kind of like starting to like really become a thing. And so we played Saturday night. Sunday, we heard kind of like rumblings of, you know, Vegas is going to shut down. And we were like, that's impossible. You can't shut down the Vegas Strip. Like that's not a possible thing. Monday, we got a flood of phone calls and emails like, hey, your gigs are canceled for like the foreseeable future. Everything. I don't know. Like, sorry, this is just weird. Things are going on.
I knew it was bad when we had a gig for the military.
Yeah.
And they were the first to call. And that gig wasn't until October.
Yeah.
And when they called and said, we're canceling, I was like, this is about to get a lot worse.
Yeah. So we got all of our stuff canceled and we're like, well, what are we going to do? You know, St. Patrick's Day is a huge day for us. And that was the following day, the Tuesday. We're like, well, let's just like get on Facebook Live and do like an acoustic type St. Patrick's Day show. So we did that and we had like 100 and some odd people watching. And we were like, okay, this could be a thing we could do.
And it was bad. Like we didn't have like what we now, if you watch our streams now, it's with full sounds and lights and all that. We had a speaker and a phone we played way in the back and all that. And it's just
hilarious.
Like, yeah.
But it worked.
It sounded meh, but I mean, it work. And then immediately after that, we just lived and I was like, we got to make this work. And so.
Well, and people were like, are you going to do this again?
Yeah, they were excited. They
this is cool. Like, can you do this again? And we're like, I guess.
I think what helped us on that was because everyone at that point, all the jobs went away and everyone was stuck at home.
Yeah.
And so there's no entertainment. And so because we jumped on it and we went in with this attitude of, look, we're here to entertain people. That is our job, is to entertain people. Let's just figure it out. So we decided on 2 days a week, we're just going to go and entertain people for a couple hours. If people like it, cool. If they don't, I mean, whatever. And it just kept building and building and building. And it was like, this could be a lucrative thing for us if we play our cards right. And I think it was because we jumped on immediately.
Literally the day of the shutdown we started.
Yeah. And, you know, it's gotten better because we've researched how to do things. We got off of Facebook. We went over to Twitch. And being on Twitch, we found a whole community of musicians that are in the same position that we are. And, you know, there's a band in Calgary lost all their jobs because of COVID. A band down in Atlanta lost all their gigs and they're just like us. And it's just like, Well, what do we do? Well, let's support each other and build a community. And so this music community on Twitch is massive, and it just, it supports and lifts each other up. And I think that's why we've been able to do this, because we've had that kind of support.
Yeah.
We've heard musicians, oh, I tried the live streaming, I didn't like it because there's no crowd interaction. And it's like, everyone's played to no one.
We've all done it.
We have a TV and a chat, and it's like, you have to be able to just adjust and try something new.
Yeah. Yeah. The adjustment was really, I mean, it was weird at first. Like, we weren't really sure how to act in front of a phone or a camera, but you know, once we got our whole thing together and you can see people talking to you and talking to each other in the chat, it's like no different. It just kind of becomes normal. Like, you interact with people asking you questions in the chat as you would talk to somebody in the bar or whatever. So you just kind of have to make that little adjustment to your environment.
We played last night. Somebody requested 500 Miles, The Proclaimers, which it's the typical cover band song. And so during the middle of it, we, you know, the da-da-da-da, we're like, all right, everyone, sing along. And our chat was nothing but da-da-da-da. And it was like, so you're still getting that. We played, somebody requested Sweet Caroline, and we hate that song, but we played it anyways, and we saw bop, bop, bops going through there. What was the other thing? When we played Bare Naked Ladies.
And we did
$1 Million, and we did the whole, you know, back and forth banter that they do in the middle of the song. And people are just laughing hysterically. They're like, this sounds just like Bare Naked Ladies banter. It's like, well, you know, so you do have crowd interaction. It's just on a TV.
Yeah, sure.
No, I mean, I think it's great that you guys have been able to make that work for you guys. And I would imagine that having had so much experience as a professional cover band would help to translate to that, because for a lot of bands who are not in that space, they're not really used to having to do that kind of, you know, interaction, and they don't necessarily have so many songs in their arsenal to do like several hours worth of material in one fell swoop. I mean, you guys were saying that you guys were on for like 6 hours last night.
12 hours.
I mean,
the full band on Tuesday nights does no more than 6 hours. That's where we end it at 6 hours, just because we want to save Ryan's legs.
Well, and we're standing, and so we're doing like the full band, like rock show kind of thing. Yeah, so it's pretty taxing.
A lot of energy going
Here in this area, too.
Yeah, like literally where we're at.
But no, 12 hours last night. But we also, it's all request. Like, we don't have a set list, and we pick the first song, and then it's up to everyone else to pick. And a lot of times, if we don't know it, we tell people, let's figure out another song. And we tell people, don't pick anything modern. Like, if it's after 2006, you're not going to have any luck with us.
And so
it's a lot of, you know, we have Ultimate Guitar tabs ready to go, and we can look up songs real quick. Last night we played Lemonade.
Yeah, that's become a huge hit,
by the way. Yeah, Lemonade is a huge hit. People love us playing that. And then somebody else came in late at the end of the night. They're like, can you play Tsunami Bomb? And we're like, okay. And so we played Mushy Love Song. Which there's no tab for. So
it's pretty easy song.
we figured it out.
I think it was right, yeah.
Yeah, but and you get your typical, can you guys play Bon Jovi? No, we cannot. We don't play Bon Jovi.
I mean, yes, we can.
For one band.
No, we don't want to.
there's one band that if they come in and watch us, we'll play Bon Jovi for. Anyone else? No. It's $5,000.
Yeah. Pay me. Like, I'll play Bon Jovi if you pay me. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much
But that's cool. Now, so your guys' most recent record, It Took an Apocalypse, just dropped this last Friday. Which people watching this, I guess, would mean a few weeks back, but
21st,
yeah. The 21st of May.
Yeah, 21st of May. Thank you for flashing the date. So it's coming out on Die Laughing Records. And tell me about how that partnership kind of came together.
It took an apocalypse.
So we've been playing together for a long time. Like I said, Rockskin Project started in like late 2010, and we had some label interest before, but like nothing. It was the typical.
Andy Pohl.
No way. I have no idea what you're talking about.
We had, over the course of our career, we had some label interest, but it was the typical like, well, we like her kind of thing. And I'm like, well, that's not what I'm here for. Like, that's not what I'm about.
Can you put down the guitar and just
sing,
wear this like, bikini and dance around or whatever.
That kind of situation, which I was like, garbage. Not interested. So Pre-pandemic, we had kind of connected with Die Laughing, and we were talking about different stuff, and they're just kind of like, well, you know, we'll see kind of how you guys do and what's going on. And we're like, all right, cool. So we understood that, and then boom, COVID. And we were like, well, that sucks, because we were supposed to do 5 tours in 2020. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be the push to prove, like, hey, we can sell records. What do you think? Kind of thing.
Yeah, so we're willing to put in the groundwork.
Yeah. So we didn't get the opportunity to do that. But we did manage to get one of our songs played on Sirius XM. And Rodney Bingenheimer, who's like, you know, alum of radio in LA, really liked one of our songs. He liked a couple of them, but one he liked in particular was Lola off our first album. And he posted on Facebook something about, like,
it was a trivia question.
It was a trivia question of, like, what songs have mentions of street names in Hollywood?
Yeah, it was Hollywood and Vine.
What song?
And so Lola was
the answer.
And so he used our song in this trivia thing. And so immediately Die Laughing was like, hey, hello. We saw that Rodney likes you guys.
Yeah.
What's going on? So we were in talks with them, and just kind of, we'd like, what do you guys want to do? Like, what's your plan? And we're like, well, we want to release a record, obviously, but we'll push the crap out of it. Like, we'll work hard for you if you give us the chance. They were like, all right, well, let's do this and see how it goes.
And yeah, they gave us another, like, okay, well, let's revisit this in a month or so.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, whatever. And then, you know, we kept getting played on Rodney, and then we had some other press come out about us. And then all of a sudden it was just like, phone call. It's like, hey, Dave, who's the label owner, he wants to have a meeting and we want to discuss some stuff. And I think what helped us was we went in with one, like I said earlier, this is a business.
Yeah.
And we came in not being the band like, oh my God, yeah, we'll do whatever you want. We went in with this is our game plan. This is how we want to do things. And they were just like, you guys have your shit together. And we're like, well, yeah, it's like, we've been doing this for so long. And they're like, we can tell. Like, they were even taking notes from us. Like, you can do that? Like, and so I think that's what helped, is them go, this band is not playing around. Like, they know what they want, how they want it, and when they want it. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, we were excited. We were excited to be approached with this opportunity, but we were also very like, okay, well, you know, we're going to send this to our lawyer to take a look at, and we're going to make sure that this makes sense for us and makes sense for you guys. And like, here's what we want to do. Can you help us achieve that kind of thing? So I think going in with a plan other than just like, oh my God, we're signed, like, was a major, major, you know, thing for them. They're like, okay, these guys want to work and they know how this operates. And, you know, let's see what we can do. It was very much like a partnership, really.
Yeah, yeah. We both took our roadmaps and went, oh, this is pretty similar.
There's what, like one or two little amendments to
very small changes
to the agreement or the contract that they sent over. And they were like, I don't know about this. We're like, okay, no big deal. They just They're just like, that's not even anything to worry about. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And so they were very eager to work with us as well. And it worked out. It worked out really nice. It's a good situation.
Yeah. It's so long being DIY and having to do this stuff ourselves. We were just like, we know what we want. I mean, our album actually got delayed. It was supposed to be released in April, got released in May. And it was kind of like, oh, great. You know, like if we had this, we get it. And then we're like, but then again, it's like, I kind of like having it delayed because it got more anticipation. And the moment that we did pre-sale, it was wildfire, because we kind of gotten away from Facebook. You know, Facebook doesn't want you to be successful.
Yeah.
And they do not.
So we've
had this conversation.
We have.
We had a conversation with the label, and they at first didn't want to do physical copies because this is a digital market. Everyone buys digital. They stream music. They don't buy music. And I kept telling them, I'm like, I'm going to prove you wrong that people want to have the physical. We have people that want it. And so we convinced them to let us have 100 CDs for a pre-sale. And we're only doing it on Twitch during our stream. And they get an exclusive pack. And we sold out. We kept a couple off the stream so we could try to push it on Facebook. But we still sold 100 and people are still, and so once the 100 are gone, they decided to go ahead and press some more for themselves, and it's selling on their website right now. And they're kind of shocked, like, why is this happening? So actually one of the bands that has a pre-sale coming up decided to do 100 physical copies too. And it's like, there is still people. It's the same people that want vinyl are the people that want, even if they, Charlie, you know, are everyone's favorite roadie and tour manager and drummer. He doesn't have a way to play it, but he loves holding on to a physical copy.
I think that
you're right. I think that there is like a subsection of the population that, regardless of how they actually consume music, they ultimately do want to have a physical artifact, you know, as a, if anything, just a means of like showing support in like a way that's tactile, because you know, I'm not going to go around and necessarily like, and I guess it's not so much for bragging rights, but maybe it could be, but like personally, like I collect vinyl, and if CD is the only way to buy something, I'm not as inclined to buy it, but occasionally I will. But, you know, prior to me kind of, you know, doing more vinyl collecting, I was definitely buying CDs. Like I wasn't just like only buying, I wasn't like, I never bought anything off of iTunes, like ever. You know, like I would only ever buy the CD, and then I would, you know, put it onto my like MP3 player or something like that. Yeah. But I've just never been that person that consumes music that way. Nowadays, though, I will buy stuff off of Bandcamp from bands, because a lot of bands only put stuff on Bandcamp.
So if
that's the way that I can help support them, I'll do it that way. But I don't want to give Apple my money. You know, I'd rather give an entity like Bandcamp, which is actually trying to provide a better service for artists directly, you know,
definitely,
you know, so, but I think that it's, I think that that is great that you were able to prove that point, because I certainly understand where Die Laughing is coming from, where it's like, like, you know, I don't necessarily want to risk putting a bunch of money into a physical artifact, and CDs aren't that expensive, but at the same time, even, you know, dipping in a couple $100 for something that you don't think is really going to sell well, you know, it's money that you'd rather hold on to and like maybe use that for digital marketing instead, like putting ads on Facebook or something, which, as you pointed out, Facebook is not very friendly to anyone at this point unless you're giving them money, and that's
a lot of money, really, is what it is.
And but it's kind of an unfortunate it's like a necessary evil at this point. You know, so, but I think that it's really good that you guys have been able to kind of circumvent that by going to Twitch, and so like, I like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would venture to say that you're probably utilizing Instagram and Facebook at this point just to get people to come over to Twitch, right?
Pretty much.
So Instagram and Twitter have been our big, because Facebook, again, if you put a link to something, it's going to be
throttles it immediately.
And, and I just got a new Facebook, and I only have like 300 friends on there. I have not seen one Crimson Riot post. I'm not even, I'm not an admin or anything on Crimson Riot, but I like the page and I put it as one of my favorites. I have not seen a Crimson Riot or a Roxy Gun Project post. And I only have 300 friends. And what I get is, oh, you reached the end of your feed. Here's some suggested posts. And I'm like, well, where's all the people I want to see their stuff? And it's because there's a link or something. There might be a picture that Facebook doesn't want me to see, because it's advertising and they're not getting money.
And it was really sad too, because when we did the pre-order, because we did like a bundle kind of thing where we did like a sticker and a patch and like all this other stuff. And, you know, we're talking like weeks after we announced the pre-order was happening. You know, we still have people going, well, how do I get the bundle? It's like, they're sold out. Like they're done, you know, kind of
that
thing.
Was 2 weeks ago, dude.
Andy Kohler.
Yeah, Andy Kohler asked. He was like, I didn't even see anything about, like, there were people that didn't even realize we were putting out a new album.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's how badly Facebook squashed it.
Yeah, didn't see all the stuff of us in the studio
recording the album.
Like, there's videos and pictures for days of us in the studio. People didn't even know.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't even know if that was happening.
Yeah, it's a real conundrum for anyone really, but especially like anyone who's trying to like really leverage social media for like their art or like their business, to try to circumvent those algorithms and actually get in front of more people without having to spend a bunch of money. Because like one thing that I've like come to find out is that it actually costs a lot to really get in front of the audience that you really are trying to get in front of.
Oh yeah.
And there's like a whole like series of like tutorials out there and like stuff that you can watch on YouTube about how to do it the right way. And it, like everything that I've learned from it is that it's not so much that it's not worth it, because it is worth it, but you really have to kind of just be dedicated to it, and you have to
commit full on.
It's going to be like your kind of bread and butter with it. And I don't know. I mean, I know some people that have been very successful with it. I know some bands that have been able to leverage it, and like they fine tuned it the right way to where they're getting in front of the right people, and you know, they've just made it work. But it does take time, it takes money, and it takes practice to do that, which a lot of people just unfortunately don't have the bandwidth or the patience for.
And that's why like a lot of bands that, you know, are successful with it that, you know, we've come across, they have like a marketing person, like they have somebody who just does that for them, you know, because like when you're DIY and it's like just us, it's like between everything we have going on, it's like sitting on Facebook for 6 hours trying to get everything like done and fixed up and whatever. It's like, it's tough. It's hard to like, to put all that into one platform.
we during the Top Golf thing, we actually met a marketing firm that worked for Top Golf and HBO and I think Netflix, like this company worked. And so we asked them, we're like, so what's the secret to Facebook? And they laughed and they're like, don't post on Facebook. They're we're a marketing firm. And they're like, the problem with Facebook is they change their algorithm every 2 weeks. So what works this week and 2 weeks will not work.
It's like the Enigma machine. Like it just changes every 24 hours.
And you're never going to know. And by the time you figure it out, they've already changed it. So they were saying like, we spend millions of dollars marketing on Facebook, and you see the numbers versus the marketing on Twitter, the marketing on Instagram, the marketing on Discord or whatever. Yeah. And they're like,
Google.
Well, you know, on Twitter, we spent $1 million. We reached 300 million people. We spent $1 million on Facebook. We reached 700,000. Right. And it's like, and it's because, there was a word in there that
was flagged, that was because flagged. You know, advertising or whatever. So like, I try not to put, when we do stuff on Facebook, like the word join, tonight or a certain time, like that's like a big no-no. So it's like you have to get really, really creative with your wording.
I think tomorrow when we stream, I'm just gonna put stream.
Yeah,
if you know what it means. Come watch
you put,
us.
You put stream hashtag COVID and it'll go wildfire. Yeah.
And then I'll get flagged for misinformation.
Right.
Right.
We don't want to stream COVID. Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah. I mean, and what's wild about like doing that kind of stuff too, is that, you know, as much as there's no rules to the way that you engage with your audience, there are some like things that are pretty off, you know, limits. Like, you know, you can't go and like message everyone in your, you know, friends list and say, hey, come to this. And then you copy and paste that a million times, because people are going to hate you if you do that. Right.
Hey, right. Yeah.
Right.
I used to do that on text messages.
And that's free. But you know, you're gonna lose people from that. They're gonna be like, dude, F you, like, don't do that, right?
Right.
But you know, on the other side of the coin, you could then go ahead and spend like, you know, $10 on every post that you do, and you're hoping that that's gonna reach like maybe 25% of the people that follow you. But then, even then, there's no guarantee that any of them are gonna actually come and do the thing that you're asking them to do.
Right.
So, I don't know, like, because of the ever-changing ecosystem and the way that they present content to people, I think that like in so many ways you're right, is just kind of just don't make that your only tool in the toolbox.
Yeah.
But remember that it is a tool that you can use, but it shouldn't be the only tool you use.
I watched last night, we mentioned our Spotify for our new album, and while we were talking about it, I put a banner up so people can see it. I went on to the artist Spotify so I could see our numbers and all that, and it was at one person listening right now. By the time we started the next song, it jumped up to 20 people.
Because people
were going on the Spotify real quick to add us to their playlist and like listening, like, oh, this is really good. And it's just like, well, that was fun. It's like, so.
But it was like, that was an instant result.
As opposed
to like putting it out there and like hoping people A, see it, B, do what you're.
Click on it.
Yeah, asking them to do, going to this other thing and doing that or whatever. But with with Twitch, it's just been so crazy because the response has been insane. Like the quick result of like, hey guys, we're doing this, check out the link here. And all of a sudden it's like, boom, everybody did it.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay.
And it's like real time. You don't leave Twitch, it just opens up another window. So you can look at it and still listen to us. So we're not losing viewers and stuff like that. And also the cool thing about Twitch is the community that we're building is the reason we're going on tour in September is because another band on Twitch has a festival. This is their fifth year. It's a massive, like they had a Living Color like 2 years ago on their festival. And so they're like, you guys want to play? And we're like, sure. Totally. So we're trying to make our way there. But, you know, we mentioned this earlier. It's like, we can't, like, where do we play in these towns? What venues are open? So we put it out on our Discord and on, and we mentioned it on our stream, like, hey, we're coming to these cities. Where should we play? And it's just a flood of, this venue's still open. This venue's open. My band will open it up for you.
We have like a phone book worth of venues and numbers and emails and bands. It was great. It was awesome.
But it was instant. Like if I put that on Facebook right now, like, hey, I need to book this town or this city. Nothing, just radio. So I actually posted about Reno because Reno's pretty much a dud at this point. And I was like, is there any place to play in Reno? I had one like on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, anybody want to help?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's great that you guys have been able to find something that is seeming to work for you guys. So congratulations. And congratulations again on the record. I'm excited for you guys.
Thank you. Well,
thank you, man. Thank you.
But so wanted to move on to a couple of questions that I like to ask every guest that is on the show. The first one is, who are some artists that you think need to be on people's radars right now?
I could start this because
I'm having a conundrum with the question just because like we've surrounded ourselves with so many talented people and I'm like, I don't want to name names.
Let me frame it like this. Like, how about each of you give me like two artists that you think are just have to be on people's radars right now?
Well, I got all three for me.
Okay, go ahead.
Patty and the Rats, they're a Hungarian Celtic metal rock punk band. And they should be on the Salty Dog Cruise so everyone can see them because this band is amazing. Patty and the Rats. And then a couple that aren't on people's radars but not in the mainstream realm is Mad Caddies and Bad Cop. I think those two bands are so underappreciated and unrecognizable to like the mainstream where it's just like, if MTV still showed music videos, they would have to play them to get, because they're just, both of those bands never put out bad material and they're great live. Mm-hmm. So those are my three bands.
Yeah, definitely Mad Caddies and Bad Cop, both totally awesome bands. Yeah, agree.
So you went with like professional bands.
Yeah,
I thought we were talking about like unsigned.
Well,
like,
I mean, obviously, well, Tsunami like Bomb. Tiny bands. Tsunami Bomb should be on everyone's radar.
Well, yeah.
I mean, when I ask people this, like, I usually try to frame it as like, you know, it can be a band from, you know, years ago. It can be a band that no one's heard of. You know, I mean, it's just bands that you think are important that you think people need to listen to. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. All right. Go. Do you have something?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Go.
Okay. So Iron Meowden. Oh, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. That doesn't count. I'm gonna stick in the family and I'm gonna say Dirt Halo.
Okay.
I was gonna say
it too. Dirt Halo. That's my son's band. They're kind of on the like, what do you call it?
Like hard rock metal.
Hard rock metal scene, but man, they're good.
Yeah.
They're super good and they're really doing well. So I would say they're definitely somebody to check out. And then High Grade Pats.
High Grade Pats.
I'm gonna go with the High Grade Pats. They're a Irish Celtic band in California. I grew up with the guitar player. Really cool band. Just super good guys. And I would really like to see them do bigger things. So,
yeah. Sweet. Absolutely.
So that's two.
Yeah, for me, I'm gonna stick in kind of like the unknown realm. I was gonna say Dirt Halo too, and not just because it's my brother's band, but like I told him when he first joined them, I'm like, I hope you're okay with me like coming to see them if you ever leave because they're just really good. So them and some friends of ours are in a band called Fall Risk. Going on kind of like the Mad Caddies thing, they are outstanding and they're lead singer and guitar player Dustin is just a wealth of great songs.
Yeah.
Like his songwriting is impeccable. And
he reminds me
really
of
great.
He reminds me of Billy Joe Armstrong. Not like he plays or sings that way, but he's just
so full of music.
Songs. Yeah. Like, yeah. The dude can write a song. It's like, I'm gonna sit down and here's 15 songs. And it's like, dude, like,
and they're all great. Yeah. So yeah.
Super solid. Fall Risk.
Yeah, definitely. Fall Risk is awesome. Very, very cool.
Good call. Good call. That was good.
Yeah. Sweet. That's a great list. I appreciate it. Did you have one more, Roxy?
Crimson Riot.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh man, I don't know. I'm gonna like rapid fire a couple other bands real quick.
Sure.
Our friends Jerk are really great. We have friends in a band called Suburban Resistance.
Oh yeah.
They're super awesome.
Yeah.
And some really good friends from Utah. They're called Jeff Dylan and the Revival, and they're fun. They're like kind of a more in like the Frank Turner kind of punk realm. Yeah. So they're kind of more like that.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody the other day compared them to the Menzingers, which I was like, okay, I hear that. So, but yeah, those are some extra like rapid fire.
Sweet.
Glow Stick Willie.
Well, okay. And then I've got one last question for you guys, and people either love or they hate this, or, you know, sometimes a mixture of both, but I'm always interested to hear what people have to say. If you only had 5 records to listen to for the rest of your life, like if you were like, you know, trapped on a desert island or something, what would they be? Let's start with Ryan.
Okay.
So 5, let's see. Okay. So it would have to be, all right. It's going to be
Power Slave.
No, it's going to be Exit Stage Left by Rush.
Ooh.
It's going to be 1984 by Van Halen. Okay. It's going to be Kill 'Em All by Metallica. It's going to be probably Power Slave by Maiden, and then Thriller by Michael Jackson.
Hey,
okay,
those 5.
Solid,
nice.
That's
those a 5. Good spread, actually.
Okay,
surprised you. Well done. All right,
let's go with Chris. Go ahead.
All right. Oh, we'll see. I wrote mine down. I was ready for this question.
This question kills me every time because I'm like, how do I feel today?
Road to Ruin. You got to have that.
Yeah.
Road to Ruin. Dookie, the greatest pop punk album of all time and biggest sounding pop punk album of all time. Stunt by Bare Naked Ladies.
Wow.
Keep It Going by Mad Caddies. It Took an Apocalypse.
Hey. Crimson Riot.
I'm surprised you didn't get any Credence.
You know what?
Oh, Boys is an honorable mention.
Yeah, well, okay. I would do Chronicles by CCR.
Okay,
and yeah, there was a couple albums.
I was surprised.
I'm like, do I go with it? Do I not?
I know it's tough to pick 5, but yeah.
It's right, very hard to pick only 5.
It really is.
Parallel Lines is also great. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, it's
So if I was like on a desert island, I want some like hard variety.
Right.
So for me, I'm going to go with Moving Pictures by Rush. Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill, the acoustic version.
Okay.
The acoustic album, which is super great. And I'm going to go, no judgies, Taylor Swift's Fearless album.
Okay.
Super great.
Taylor Swift is an
record.
Awesome musician. She's an
It's
awesome
a great
artist.
Record.
Okay, all right then.
Well, that was when she was so country.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Bob Marley and the Wailers, Greatest Hits.
Nice.
I like it.
Because I'm going to be stranded on a desert island.
You got to have the island vibes, man. You got it.
And finally, Frank Sinatra, Live at the Sands.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah, no, I dig it. Yeah, that's great. I mean, you got a little something everywhere. You know, you got the little harder rock with Ryan. You got a little bit more of a punk edge with Chris. And then you got a little bit of a mixed bag with Roxy. So I can dig that. I mean, yeah, it's such an incredibly challenging question to answer if you're really trying to be like thoughtful with it, because it changes. Like, I mean, cause shoot, you could hear an album today that could completely change your perspective on music. You know, I mean, you could, cause
absolutely,
there's probably one out there that you just haven't heard yet. And you're just
absolutely.
Oh snap. Like, this is incredible. You know?
And if I didn't put It Took an Apocalypse in there, it would have been Crimson by Alkaline Trio or Chronicles CCR.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
For me, it's such a hard question because, you know, I listen to so much different music, obviously, that
so
it's like when I'm faced with the question, I'm like, okay, if I was stranded on a desert island today, what would I want to listen to all day today, right. You know, because like I thought about like maybe putting Escape by Journey on there because that's also a great record, but yeah. It's just like I don't know, like if I'm going to the island today, what am I taking?
Like, yeah, because like when I think about it, like I like to think that I would probably want to have something that evokes different emotions, like not, I mean, I'd want something that's like uplifting to like try to help me feel better about like being stuck somewhere like for the rest of my life,
yeah.
But at the same time, I'd want to have something that might like help me, you know, get into like a little bit of sadness, you know, because like you need to kind of put yourself there every once in a while and you got to like feel that because like, let's face it, like you're stuck on a fucking desert island, you know, like,
yeah. You're going to be sad about it sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I should probably start reframing the question though, a little bit, because like, it's not so much about being stuck on an island. It's just more like, if you could only listen to 5 records for the rest of your lives, like what would they be? You know? So right. Like, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll fine tune it like going forward, but nonetheless,
I mean,
it's a great question.
I still listen to Bare Naked Ladies Stunts religiously. And that album came out in late 99 or something, yeah, like that. 98 or something, yeah, like that. And that album still holds up. Like I will never get tired of that album. And there's also a lot of music too, right, that has a nostalgia, you know,
well, that was mine. I mean,
like you listen to it and it takes you back. Like,
yeah, the mid 80s were such a great time in my head from when I was a kid. And that was always like, I always felt happy then. Yeah. I always felt happy. And I just loved all those albums and I played them in my Walkman, like a set tape. And I think those albums that I said were like just kind of that time period where life was awesome for me, you know, when you're a kid. So
sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I forgot snow. Snow would be awesome. 12 inches of snow.
There you go.
Oh Lord. Okay, we're veering off the rails here.
Right.
But no, guys, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Congratulations on the release of the record. I'm really excited for you. And I'm really super excited that you guys are going to be able to start playing live music again. I know that you guys have been missing it in front of a crowd.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I'm really excited that you guys have managed to figure out a way to keep things going during the pandemic. I know it was a really hard time for you, but pleasure to have you on the show again. We'll hopefully see you in real life real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.